Season 4, episode 18, I Love Lucy. It opens up with Angela and Peaches coming into the precinct and requesting specifically male detectives, even though they are Detective Russell's snitches, we've learned from previous episodes.
Snitches is a harsh word, but okay.
Well, they give him information.
Informants.
They use the word snitches in this episode, too.
It doesn't make it right, Kurt.
At one point, Peaches said, Angela's about to be a dead hoe unless we get a strong male presence involved. And Sipwood says, I guess strong would leave you out. Because this episode, if it's not anything, it's a lot of transgender jokes. Mostly from Sipwood's about these women having dongs.
But it's also a pretty progressive episode.
They asked to discuss what's going on in the lunchroom, interrogation room, because they want donuts.
Commissary, is that what they call it?
No, it's not a commissary.
No, they call it.
It's not a commissary, Kyle.
What they call it, though?
It's just the room where they put the donuts.
Interrogation room.
Well, I guess it's the break room.
But they called it something.
Well, the two transgender hookers just wanted donuts. So they said, can we go into the room to discuss this over a donut? Anyway, she says, I hope they got the lemon-filled ones, and touches Sipowicz, to which he says, don't touch me.
Don't touch me.
That's pretty funny. Angela lets them know that she was considering an operation to turn herself into a woman.
Mm-hmm.
By, I guess, cutting off her current penis.
I don't know how they do it.
But said she decided not to because a friend of hers did the surgery and got infected, and she doesn't want the same thing to happen to her. Simone deduces that that's angering some type of love interest who wanted her to become a woman. Peaches calls him a real detective. And she's very hesitant to describe who it is and what he's doing. Sipowicz comments, do you realize what this morning is going to be like? As if he doesn't get things like this all the time, which I felt was kind of strange.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, do you realize how bad this morning is going to be? It's like, this shit happens all the time. I don't know what you're freaking out about. They get the name Jimmy Cortez, which is a muscle-bound Puerto Rican man, according to Peaches. Sipowicz makes the joke, you should have your own talk show. And he also says to Angela, did somebody do your hair with a blowtorch? He's just got quips all day. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where two brothers and sometimes their father talk about every single episode of the show NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Why should we redo the whole intro?
I think you kind of screwed the pooch on it.
Okay, that's pretty harsh. I just didn't feel like... I feel like halfway through. Jesus.
Yeah, Papa Asher's here today, as well as me being Kirk and the other voice being Kyle. Sometimes he's a fan favorite, and people request his presence.
Kirk, I think he's the only fan favorite.
That and Max. That we have. Occasionally people hear Max on the show. When they come back from the break, Metavoy's asking what happened to the pastry or what array.
That was funny.
Relating it to a swarm of locusts.
Is he on a diet now? I forget.
He is on a diet.
Bouncing back and forth on his bullshit diets.
Because I think the last one, he was having dinner with the lesbians, and he was upset that he was eating all the peanut butter. And he kept commenting on how that's off of his diet, eating the peanut butter.
That's right, fair enough. He's always on the diet, though.
Fancy starts hawking some beauty products.
What's Amway? Since you're here.
What's Amway?
What's Amway?
Do you know what Mary Kay is?
Yeah.
It's Amway's sort of... Amway has different products.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of what it looked like he had. But it runs like Mary Kay. It's a sort of pyramid scheme.
Okay.
And you have to keep buying product even if you don't...
Sell the product.
Sell the product, and so you end up with a garage full of shit that you paid for, but
you
can't get rid of.
Okay.
0.5% of the people really make a good living at it, and then 99% of the people
don't
pay for those other people.
Okay.
It's not cool.
I just didn't know what Amway was, because they kept saying, like, is this like Amway?
Yeah. If you know what Mary Kay is, or what do they call it, Pampered Chef? Tupperware?
Sorry. Apparently his wife, Lillian... She says it's not a scheme and that they're a trusted brand. And one of the stories in this episode is literally Fancy debating whether or not he should sell it to his squad.
Yeah.
Saying that, is it wrong that they might try to curry favor by buying his stuff? And that's literally like the C story of this episode, is him going back and forth. and leading to a scene with Tamara Tooney, who plays his wife.
He has like a panic attack over it.
Yeah, he really freaks out. The scene that I noted that was really weird was when Russell is like looking through the bag at her own desk, and he's like, "These don't belong here." And he starts putting it back in the bag and grabs one out of her hand and like throws it into his office.
Yeah.
He freaks out because Medavoy has a stomach problem, and he assumes it's the vitamins that he sold him. And he's also worried that Gina, the girl at the front desk, is buying more than she needs just to curry favor with him. Which I thought was a legit concern, but it's still a little weird. Like, I'm also not the boss. So, as someone who is over people, well, I guess you are too.
But you're also not, we're not black bosses either.
It's weird. It's weird.
It's fair. I mean,
if I took stuff in for you guys, I would never say to anybody unless they asked what it was for. You know, I'd never bring it up, hey, my son has to sell, you know, 100 candy bars so he can play baseball or whatever. I'd just bring him in and put a little sign that said a dollar, and if they bought them, they bought them. Because, you know, I don't want somebody thinking I'm putting undue pressure.
Yeah.
So that they can keep their
job. I also look at it this way. If someone who is my quote-unquote subordinate, whatever, comes to me and he says, like, hey, my daughter's trying to sell stuff, and if I do it, if I come around and I'm trying to sell something, like, you better do it as well, you know? Like,
it's kind of fair. I think a quid pro quo situation.
Yeah, it's kind of fair. Like, I'm not looking for, like, the greatest, but, like, I'm not looking at you to match what I gave you, but, like, just something. Like, a little bit, like, pretend. I don't know.
The scene, I mean, the most enjoyable scene is when he talks to his wife, and she's like, I thought we already talked about this. You're just freaking out. It's a reputable company, and then he just kind of, she just accepts that she's not going to sell any of the squad, and then takes it with her.
Well, no, he said they could contact her. She didn't like that, but that's fair enough. Like, he can say, like, hey, she's selling the stuff. If you want it, you can contact her. If he doesn't feel comfortable, she can't
force him to do it.
Like,
or she shouldn't.
She shouldn't force him to do it, yeah.
There's also the scene, the last scene we ever talk about, it, Fancy goes into the bathroom, and he's talking to Sipowicz about the case he's working on, and then Sipowicz is like, yo, can I get some long... Wait, he doesn't say yo. He says, can I get some... Sipowicz got real urban all of a sudden. He said, can I get some laundry detergent? And he said, oh, I decided not to sell in the squad. It's funny because Sipowicz says laundry detergent specifically, and he says, no, just... We didn't want to sell the products in the squad. And then Sipowicz very suspiciously is like, and not just, you're not selling to everybody but me. Thinking that maybe he's singling out Sipowicz again.
Well, that wouldn't be like a shock. Him and Sipowicz don't really get along.
But he always gives Sipowicz a fair shot, and I don't think he would refuse something to Sipowicz if he asked for.
I know, but everyone in the department was able to buy something but him. So I can see where he might think that. You know what I mean?
Because he knows
great. I think by the time Fancy approached him, he had already stopped selling to anybody.
But in Sipowicz's mind, he's thinking, oh, I've had run-ins with Fancy. Maybe he's singling me out. He doesn't want me to buy from him for some weird reason.
But I thought Kyle was agreeing with that, and I'm saying no. By that time, he had, you know, he gave it back to his wife. He said, I'm not doing this. It wasn't just Sipowicz.
We got two stories. Well, two main investigations. One's with Jill Kirkendall running the show. The other's with Simone and Sipowicz and Angela. Well, Russell's there, too. What should we do first?
Okay.
We have a don't care.
You're the boss.
And we have a you're the boss. All right.
Let's do Kirkendall's, because I think it has the...
Well, it has the title of the episode, because it's Lucinda.
Oh, then let's end with it.
Well, I mean,
and they keep calling her Lucy too. Yeah, let's do trannies.
Okay, we're doing trannies. So
I wanted to say something about the very opening scene.
What is that?
And you're moving on already.
What?
You need to get in on it, man. He moves quick. He runs a tight ship.
Well, you didn't mention at all that the African American.
Oh, here we go.
Peaches.
Yeah, took a liking to Simone right away.
So did Angela.
Number one said...
They all do.
Something like, well, aren't you...
Angela says, aren't you a doll?
Doll, and when he's in, when they're in the room and he says something, oh, that's a detective.
Well, yeah, they all want
it. She wanted well, in. She episode, wanted in. He, she wanted in on it.
The episode before, they say something about him in the street. When
yeah.
they witness a murder or something, they're out there.
Every
they call him like a fine piece of man or something like that. Yeah.
Every time there's a female character who would be brash enough to make a comment about a dude, they make it about Simone. It's always about how attractive Simone is. But you are right. They were all about him from the very beginning.
From the very beginning. And also, did it seem like Sipowicz was annoyed with the whole thing?
Yeah. He's like that the whole episode.
He's not like that the whole episode. We'll get to it when we get to the end.
Ooh.
I think he is the whole time. Well, when they...
He doesn't like... I don't think he wants to deal with the transgendered folk.
I agree. He does.
In the beginning.
We'll talk about it at the
end. In the beginning, he does not want to deal with them. That's why when it starts out, he's
he
like
doesn't
annoying.
Want to deal with them, but he's going to protect them if that's what the law is.
Because well, yeah.
he's come down, he comes down pretty hard on the guy.
That's never been the issue.
Right?
But his issue is like that.
So,
still
so he's got
still doesn't not make you
qualities.
Qualities. No, the
stamp. Moving on.
Well, the next scene, they go after Jimmy Cortez.
Cortez. I couldn't think of Cortez.
They don't get the apartment number, so they're literally buzzing all the apartments. Sipowicz says, moron broad doesn't remember the apartment number.
Yeah, but pretty, yeah, it's a pretty inclusive conversation.
Because Simone says, I'm glad you're referring to her as a woman. And he said, I take them as they are, not and try not to look between their legs. Which is a very progressive thing from Sipowicz, of all people.
But not really, because he's like still won't let them touch him.
Well, yeah, the beginning of the episode was, she touches him, he goes, don't touch me.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to deal with them and his, like, utter just, like, grossness.
The Jimmy Cortez, who is played by Clifton Collins Jr., famous face, you may have noticed in the movies like Traffic.
Mm-mm. Never saw it.
The second Boondock Saints, All Saints Day.
Right, I saw it, but who cares?
He's in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He's in a bunch of very odd movies. But Jimmy Cortez gets picked... he doesn't get picked up by him, but they try to... tell him to stop bothering Angela because they don't really have a case against him. He's yelling about how he's not a fag, to use a slur.
He isn't. He isn't a bundle of sticks.
The guy even accuses Sipowicz, like, what did she do for you? And he said, yeah, we're going on secret trysts. Sipowicz says, if we agree you're not a fag, are you going to stay away from Angela? They basically just repeat the same thing over and over and then go into
That's
the car.
A binding contract, by the way.
That doesn't hold up in court.
No.
Sipowicz, when he gets in the car, says, collar him for slapping a whore, judge laughs in your face. Which I thought was a little of gross truth of just the judicial system.
Yeah.
When they get back to the house, Russell asks about it. Sipowicz calls it tremendously productive. Later in the episode, not right after that, but later in the episode, Russell is up for a dead pross, which
yeah.
they ride down and find out that it is Angela, and she was cut up quite a bit.
Don't they automatically, like, they automatically assume it's Angela?
I don't know if they kind of give each other looks before they get in the car.
You know, the way they react to it, it's like, I felt like they knew it was her.
They say that a black prostitute ran away from the scene and someone left a license plate number on a light poster phone pole or something. They tacked it on. Sipowicz comments, there's no use, it's the boyfriend. Let's go pick up the dumb son of a bitch. Sipowicz does make a point to let, I think it's Shannon, the uniform cop
mm-hmm.
that was there, to let him know, like, hey, look after Russell. Like, she knows this person, which was kind of cool. Simone and Sipowicz spend all night on Jimmy Cortez's place trying to find him, but instead pick up the guy who owns the car with that license plate, which is Mr. Drury.
It's a white dude.
White dude who's complaining that they were like stormtroopers in the night because he's a dude with a family that is going to be brought in for having sex with a transgendered prostitute. and witnessed a murder and left.
Did he witness the murder, or did he witness, like, the beginnings of a murder?
Would you say someone witnesses a murder? Would you say someone witnesses a murder if they see people start to fight and then leaves before they actually kill the person?
Wait, repeat that?
Because isn't the intent of the person to kill another person started?
Okay, because, so, like, what if she would have gotten pulled out of the car, he hits her twice, she falls, and then he speeds away.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, let's say Jimmy Cortez goes somewhere, comes back, and then, like, stabs her a bunch of times. He doesn't witness the stabbing, so he doesn't witness a murder.
That's a fair point. What are your feelings on this?
You don't witness a murder unless you witness a murder.
Okay. Well, he wasn't the scene of the murder.
Scene of the murder, he was there, yes. He saw an altercation, but he didn't see the actual, you know.
Thank you.
This guy's worried that his, this guy's worried that his reputation's on the line with his family and his wife because he was getting a $40.
It might be hard to explain when you get home.
So he explains that he paid.
But how do you get up, like, how did they get him off of that? You know what I mean? Like, what do they do to help him? Because he does help them out.
They don't have to bring him in as a witness by going to get the actual guy and then having him confess.
But he already got pulled in.
But he got pulled in from work.
Okay.
So only the people at work know he was getting
hunger from. Well, they don't know that yet. They just know he got pulled in. He can lie about that. He could say, like, oh, he can make up some bullshit by the time.
She was in my car because...
No, they don't know any of that.
They don't know what he did to get pulled in by the cops.
Yeah.
He could have... He probably covered when he got back going, oh, it was some bullshit with parking tickets. It was some bullshit with this thing I didn't do.
Or a wrong license plate. Something like that.
But if he had to testify, he has to say in court...
Right. I totally get that.
Yeah, that part, yeah. But work, I can see, he also... If he doesn't go back to work right away, he can buy time and make something up. I don't know.
He says, you're not helping me with my coworkers, I think, during the interrogation. Sipowicz threatens him twice because he's getting all types of indignant about the whole process, even though they're not actually interested in him. And then when he leaves, they make a quick, pithy joke. Do you think he'd be upset about Angela's Johnson? Simone says, that'd be the anchovy on the pizza. Which I remember watching it with Papa Asher. He got a little chuckle out of that, that line specifically.
Why anchovies?
People don't like anchovies.
But people don't like transgender penises either.
I guess so. People are not a big fan of the transgender penises. The next day they come in. Did you have anything to say about that? I feel like I have to check in.
I have no opinion on transgender penises.
Because you gotta. When they come back to the house, there's a moment where Sipowicz says, we got our thumbs up our butts pretty good, because they spent two nights looking for Jimmy Cortez and they got nothing. And who is there but a NYPD Blue alum, Arthur Cartwell.
Yeah.
And Arthur Cartwell is there because he says he has some information that he would like to discuss privately. But this is after he tells Gina she needs to get a piece for her purse, commenting on her scar.
Yeah.
From her attempted rape.
And he kept saying, like, what's wrong with the world today?
Mm-hmm.
Scarring up a pretty face like yours, yeah. And he makes, like, a weird, like...
Yeah, he makes a weird, like, gun in the holder. Sipowicz and Simone come up to the desk, and Gina says, this guy has information on your case. And Sipowicz says, he's got information on everything, including that balloon that blew up. And Arthur Cartwell goes, which one? Not Snoopy. And I thought that was probably one of the more clever lines of this episode. They bring Arthur Cartwell in, who says he eyewitnessed Jimmy Cortez murdering Angela. And they quickly deduce that Peaches told Arthur Cartwell to tell them so that they would get an eyewitness. They would go get Jimmy Cortez.
And she didn't... And she,
so how did they get to that point so quickly?
And she didn't have to be involved.
Here's how I think they got to that quickly. I think it was a good interview, because Arthur Cartwell's a very fun character. He's just like a guy who's looking for money without actually doing any actual work. The reason they figure it out so fast is because they know Arthur Cartwell was looking for money. So he has the motivation to come in and tell the story and seem like the big shot. But they know he wasn't there because he said, I was the only person there. I'm the only one that saw it. When they know the John was there and they know Peaches was there. So they know he's making up the story.
I did not catch that.
Yeah, because that's why That's why
the paper.
That's why Simone, when Arthur Cartwell's telling the story, Simone goes, "Really? Was anyone else there?" And he goes, "Nope, but you got me." And he's like, "You're lying. You weren't the only one there, so we know you didn't."
Okay.
So that's why they go, "Then you can tell us where Peaches is, because we know she saw it."
Yeah.
And he's like, "What would that get us?" Because there's a lot of, I didn't write all of them down, surprising, I know, but there's a lot of great lines in that specific back and forth, because Arthur Cartwell's so funny, where he says things like, "Yeah, when I got you all on that Willie Lopez clearance, you got a feather in your cap, but I was poor as that morning." Then when he's like, "Well, what information, how much is it worth for where Peaches is?" And he's like, "Cino." And then he gives him a wink and a... and then writes down where she is. And it ends with Arthur Cartwell going, "Now I'm going to be on the lookout for this evil Puerto Rican. I should just be made an honorary member of this department." Because now he's, like, trying to be a snitch for him.
Yeah, but didn't Sipowicz say, when he said, "It's going to cost to keep you away from the dentist, from getting your jaw fixed or something?" He says that.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what exactly.
He's like, "What is that going to..." Because he asked, "What is it? How much does it cost for the information on where Peaches is?" And he says, "It's going to cost not having to have your jaw reset."
Yeah.
Simone is the one that goes, "Cino," and just puts it on top of the thing.
I like Sipwood's answer better.
You gotta pay your informants, though. It's the number one rule.
San Cortez catches him in a thing from the past.
Cartwell catches him.
Cartwell catches Cortez. Before that, just because I wanted to mention this, because this is a weird thing about this episode, they do get to Peaches. But Peaches refuses to give a statement and then just openly admits to cops, "I'm going to kill Jimmy Cortez on the street." Which I found weird.
She's grieving.
Emotions.
But there's something else that's important about that scene that I wanted to mention. Because I have the understanding that Sipowicz is just mildly annoyed at this entire case.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says the phrase, "You know what today's going to be like?" Then when Peaches is crying... Keep in mind, he has watched tons of people cry on this show. People that are family members of deceased, people who committed murders. He's seen tons of people cry. This is the first time that while a person's grieving and crying, he goes up to Simone and goes, "Here come the faucets." When it's like, what the fuck? Like, why is her pain less real than anybody else that you've dealt with so far? That's why I think he views this as a mild annoyance.
Yeah, more than I agree.
And at the beginning of the episode, when Angela puts her head on the notebook, and he goes, "Her head's on the notebook." It's like, what the fuck? Like, give people a minute to exist.
She's not having a good day, man. Jeez. Can I get a live?
But while they're talking to Peaches, who refuses to give a statement, Cartwell called and said he has Cortez. And you brought it up. He trapped him inside a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Farrell style.
Which... That scene's really crazy because he trapped him in a phone booth, got a woman to take a picture of him while the cops pick him out of the phone booth with him. So
yeah,
there's
that was
proof.
A little much.
And he's running around, he's saying batter, batter, and hitting the phone booth and not letting Jimmy out.
Kept taking Polaroids of it, too.
While they're catching him, he has no shame in going up to Simone and going, "So when's my money coming through on this one?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Well, call us tomorrow. We'll get you set up. Just fucking relax." And at that moment, Sipowicz says the line, "Everything about this case has been embarrassing." And my thought is, why has it been embarrassing before this? Because now it's a guy getting your criminal for you. What was embarrassing previously? That you had to talk to prostitutes? Or you had to...
I don't think... He talks to prostitutes all the time.
I don't understand what was embarrassing about it before.
Transgender.
That's why I feel like he's kind of mildly annoyed about this entire case.
Yes, he's mildly annoyed.
I've said it repeatedly. It's my thesis. Another thing we noticed when we watched it now, famous face in that scene, Preston Lacey from Jackass, is the construction worker in the background when they're catching Jimmy Cortez.
Really?
And I was like, that looks...
Riding the jackhammer.
When I was...
Interesting.
Because I caught it, and then I was like, that's Preston Lacey. I went back and froze it. Then I just went... Preston Lacey on NYPD Blue, it was a video from Preston Lacey's account of that episode was on TV and he filmed it. He's like, yeah, I was on NYPD Blue as a background extra on this episode. And I was like, holy shit.
Cool.
Pretty cool. Preston Lacy.
Pretty cool.
Famous face from the Jackass films.
And he went down to shitting in a funnel.
Yeah, he shit in a funnel.
Fart mask.
Fart mask. And it went into Steve-O's mask, and then
well,
Steve-O's...
the shit did it, but...
The farting did.
The farting did, but and the then, shit sat there and it made it throw up.
And Steve-O just
threw up. Oh, it's one of my favorites.
I mean, if we're going to talk about favorites, I think with Preston Lacy involved, it's just him chasing Wee Man in their underwear.
Oh, chasing the bitches through the street? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one of the most random, hilarious. That investigation with Jimmy Cortez ends with him admitting to it in one of the interrogation rooms.
He says some pretty interesting stuff you kind of glossed over.
Well, no, I'm going to talk about
that. No, in the beginning, too. He talks about how, like, she's deep inside him.
Yeah, he did say that the first time they met.
Yeah, like... She's got a hold on him, all this, like, he's, like, real in it.
And talking about threatening, when they have him up against, because I said that Peaches openly threatens killing Jimmy Cortez. When Jimmy Cortez is being apprehended, he threatens, in the presence of, like, four cops, just wait till I get out to Arthur Cartwell. Like, he's going to go hurt Arthur Cartwell. And then, when they're in the interrogation room, they mention that he has blood on his shoes. Which is like...
Did you see blood on his shoes?
No.
I did.
Neither did I.
But they don't really show him that
fast.
I was
like wondering, what is he talking about? It's not like he's dripping in blood.
Oh, so it's like splatters.
Some splatters on the
yeah,
shoes.
They should have done a better job of showing blood.
Especially if they're going to highlight it
yes.
in the interview. He breaks down because it becomes clear that he was in love with a woman who has a penis. And he just couldn't handle that. And it was making him real confused and tore up inside. And his solution to this problem was to murder her.
Yes. So there was a movie called The Crying Game. that's roughly this same story.
Yes.
Except the dude hangs in there after he finds out the chick's a dude.
Like a cat. Jimmy Cortez. He says some things that...
We're still not on...
The Jill Carcanella.
The second one yet.
No, we're not. Jimmy Cortez, his final interrogation.
Yeah.
He breaks down. He says he wanted a wife and a home. And she was just living that hoe life, yeah. I guess. She was still hooking, was treating him like a pimp.
And that's what made him mad.
And he got drunk, and he went out and saw her with a John, and then he killed her. What's awkward is it ended with him talking about how he liked to dance with her. And her smile and her laugh. And then he quoted something she said. And Simone just said, and you just killed her. And that's the end of it.
So the reason he killed her is what?
She was treating him...
Like a pimp and not...
Like a pimp and not like his boyfriend.
You don't think he killed her because she was really a him?
I think that bothered him.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that was the...
No, I think that bothered him. But then Jimmy wanted to be with her... And have her stop being a prostitute. And they would somehow figure out a way to get that
operation.
I think...
You think it's because she had a dick. That's why he did it.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Because what did he say? He's making me do things. I'm not a fag.
I think...
That's what he says, right?
If I could, I would marry both of your ideas. The reason he killed her is because he got drunk. He got over-emotional. He got illogical. He said... This person has made me something I never wanted to be. I wanted a woman who was a wife that would exist in my life a very specific way. And instead, I find myself attracted to and wanting to be with a transgendered woman who is a prostitute, who refuses to meet me halfway on the life I want, and... When she has an opportunity to change a part of her life to meet me halfway in some way, she refuses to do it. And he's very selfish, and he goes, well, why doesn't she just do this for me? This is what I wanted. I never wanted to be a homosexual. I wanted to be a heterosexual man with a wife and a home. He then freaks out, kills her, and then realizes he regrets that decision. I think it's a combination of both. And that's why...
Chaka-laka.
And I think... He's a good actor because I think he kind of plays that really well where he's like, I'm a manly man, I'm a strong man, but I also love this person, but that person's a dude, I'm not a gay.
I'm not a
bundle of sticks, as they say. But that's the end. He admits to it, he goes to jail, and we have a whole nother investigation.
Can I do that investigation? I'll run it down.
Go ahead.
Okay, two old white people come in. One of them is a famous face. He's the professor or the head doctor on Scrubs.
What, do you know his name?
Nope. What's his name? Go.
His name is Ken Jenkins.
Okay, they come in. They want to talk to a detective. They
do
see.
Do you know what the Mrs. Hastings is from?
Green Acres.
No, she played Martha Kent on The Adventures of Lois and Clark.
Which was that, the Dean Cain one?
Yes.
Okay, who cares?
Some people do. But
did you watch Adventures of Lois and Clark?
No.
Oh, okay.
Good survey. Continue.
They come in. They want to talk to a detective. They see it's Kirkendall. They recognize her. They go, hey, can we go with Jill?
Mm-hmm.
So then they go with Jill. Jill tells Diane, hey, can I take this on my own?
Mm-hmm.
And Diane goes, oh, I'm just getting kicked off left and right over here. So she kicks out, you know, because she's boring as shit. Kirkendall talks to them, finds out about Lucy. Her name's Lucinda. Boom. Name of the title. I Love Lucy. Tie it all in. They start talking to her. Kirkendall deduces that she's a drug addict and that she's been stealing.
She deduces that from Mr. Hastings just telling
her. Yeah, he has no patience for it. He's also doing a really good job of showing he has some kind of disease.
Parkinson's.
Yeah. And then, so they talk about how, like, she stole some shit, one of them being a pen that he got from his father or grandfather?
Father. From graduating.
Graduating law school, Yale?
Yes, I think so. Yeah,
that's right. I know the deets.
He knows the deets.
So they basically say, the terms are, if we can get it back, they won't press charges, but
she has to go
to a rehab, but not this, like, country club crap. Fast forward to, she goes to Lucy's apartment. Is she, like, gonna answer the door half naked accepting Chinese food?
She
or was
is.
She prostituting herself?
Do you think she was prostituting herself?
And then she buy, or maybe it's she's buying drugs from somebody, but then she plays it off as Chinese food.
That's really good. I didn't think about
that. You know what I mean? Because I either felt like, because she was like, oh, you're here, right? I wish I wrote it down.
She says, how much is it? That's all she says. Kirkendall, she leaves the door open. Kirkendall knocks on the door. She comes up with her robe open and underwear. And she says, how much is it? So your idea that it's drugs makes a lot of sense, actually. But she
also, if it's Chinese, it makes a lot of sense. How much is it?
Yeah, but I was also going to say that you do that when you order food. When you buzz them in, you unlock the door and just open it, and then when they get there, they just kind of knock. You're like waiting by the door, but then boom, they just like kind of walk in hand and you move on. So, but it's weird that she. Okay, so then it's weird that she answers the door like half naked.
And then once Jill Kirkendall gets in, she like puts the robe over. She pretends like she's cleaning up. And
yeah, but then she's got like junky shit everywhere.
Junky shit.
So they end up finding
from
out
junkies are us.
So they kind of chit chat for a while, but then like Jill's like, "Hey, I'm here. I'm not just here to like, you know."
To chit chat.
I'm not here to chit chat. I'm here because, like, you know, your parents want me to. And she's like, oh, they normally send nuns, shrinks, or, you know, rabbis, whatever.
You added one, but it's. She also makes. Lucy's making an effort to not bring up the fact that she actually stole it. She keeps misdirecting.
Yeah, because she keeps getting more and more upset. You see that as the show goes on, too. I guess that's like a drug addict thing. When they're met with something, they get more angry quickly.
Well, as they're coming down from
you're
their
the
high.
What's it called? What was that show called? When the intervention expert.
Oh. They're going to say what they want to say. You get to say what you want to say, and then we're done. We got a whole bunch of people here that just love the heck out of you. Jeff Von Vondren, the dude's awesome. I want to get his book and read it.
So
he wants to get his book and read it.
As opposed to just
get it. Just get it and put it on the shelf.
Or just absorb it through the skin.
So she says she ends up telling Kirkendall, I don't have them anymore. I sold them at a pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to go to the pawn shop.
Which she does make a point that guy's a real big fan of mine.
Yeah, she gives us a foreshadow. And so then they get there, and the guy's like, oh, I don't want that, like, whore here.
He calls her Typhoid Mary.
Yeah, she, like, made my dick burn or something like that. So then Kirkendall's like, let me see your books. He's like, why? She flashes the badge, which is so funny. Like, why not just say it right away? Give me your books. Like, you know, if you just go to someone and say, give me your books, they're going to be like, who the fuck are you? So just come with them with a badge right away and be like, hey, I'm coming to take this shit. Anyway, so they give him the books. And he goes like, hey, you didn't mark in this pen and this jewelry. He said, like, oh, I was busy, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They get it back. She gets it back. But her and the girl, Lucy, keep having, like, banter. Right? I don't remember exactly
what they say. Well, it's a triple banter because he is slowly revealing that at some point, as payment for something, she had sex with him behind the counter without a condom and gave him non-specific urethritis. Which is some type of STD.
You ever had urethritis?
No.
Hey, Dad, have you ever had an STD? That was basically the equivalent of that. Hey, you ever had some unprotected sex with someone you barely know?
No, because I didn't ask him. I didn't say STD as a whole. I asked for a specific one.
Hey, have you had the gamut? Have you punched all the buttons?
Punched all the buttons?
Yeah, if it's like a bingo card or thing where you get all the STDs. I don't know. I don't know. The joke was there somewhere in the brain. The point of that scene was she's finding out that this woman not only does drugs, she's a prostitute.
Yeah. So she gets the shit back, tells the guy, the people will be back for payment later today. So then does she take Lucy right away? She tells Lucy she has to go to...
She takes her to the house to tell her.
She takes her to the house. They tell her. She tells her at the house. She throws like a fit because she can't go get high. Mm-hmm. Takes her to the home. Then the parents come in, and he gives the pen. They give her the pen and the jewelry, and the mom doesn't get it. Like, you can tell the mom is the one that keeps getting Lucy caught. Like, the mom keeps bailing Lucy out, and so like the mom. And so then the mom is like, I forget what the mom. The mom says something, and then the dad, like, very sharp. It's like, she'll never get it. She never understands. She's always babying her. Was that earlier?
That's earlier. There's the parents always have this dichotomy of she's trying to remain positive and optimistic, and he's just shutting it down. He's the one that says she's a addict and a she doesn't call her a whore. He's an addict and a thief.
Well, I think he's run out of patience with her.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Well, she hasn't given up yet, but it's detrimental.
During the last time Jill talks to the parents, she gives them the stuff, says, you gotta go to this pawn shop to pay for it, and then she sits down and he's like, I want you to understand that this isn't an easy road and she may not be successful. And the father seems like, yeah, I know. And the mom is kind of like this bright-eyed optimism, like, I think she's turning a corner. I think everything's gonna be great.
Mm-hmm.
But that leads to the next scene with Jill, where Gina tells her the babysitter called.
Okay, so now, do you fire that babysitter?
The babysitter let Lucy in because Lucy had one of Jill's cards.
Just because she had a card. Like, do you not fire that babysitter? Like, don't you set something up with the babysitter? Like, hey, the only person that comes in this house are, like, me or the grandma you met, or, like, one time. That babysitter, like, after it's all said and done, I'm like, hey, dude, sorry. Like,
especially
thank you, but nah.
Especially if you're a cop.
Yeah, like, nah.
I would imagine...
Like, I'll write you a good recommendation, but you're not watching my kids anymore.
I'll write you a good recommendation, even though you almost got my kids killed.
Well, you know, like, nah.
Well, the thing that's weird about it is Lucy's big plan was, I'm going to get out of this program, and then I'm going to steal stuff from Jill to go get high. That was the plan.
But then, was she ODing on stuff in the room?
She went to get a bag of smack and got a beat bag, which I don't understand what that means. I'm guessing it's not smack, it's just other shit that fucks up your body.
Well, no, and, well, in The Wire, when they were mixing it, it was with baking soda.
So, I don't know.
But I don't know what baking soda does when you put it in your body.
When Kirkendall gets home after hearing that there's a woman in there, babysitter let her in, but all that jazz, Lucy's on the floor, like, throwing up, clearly sick. And there's an interesting disconnect between them because Lucy's there sick. Jill comes over and says, what did you take? And she's like, nothing, I'm too sick.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, not what you stole. What kind of drugs did you take?
Did you shoot?
And
Urban Dictionary says beat bag is street lingo for a bag of pot that is not pot at all. Usually oregano, lawn clippings, or a mix of anything that works.
Yeah, but she was like
fake heroin.
She was doing like heroin, yeah.
It's fake, so it's fake heroin.
It doesn't say heroin, it says weed.
But they... I mean, the intensity of the scene is the fact that it's in her home.
So
it's the first time we see anything about Jill's personal life, really.
Yeah, two boys and all that shit. But, like...
See?
So the bigger question is...
The buyer cannot report the scam to the police because he or she doesn't dare admit she was trying to buy the illegal item in the first place.
Smooth.
The acting of Lucy is pretty suspect. Can we talk about that? Or are we still going to try to finish this thing? Because
how is it suspect? There's going to be at least 10 minutes cut out for
sure.
She's
really bad in some scenes, I feel like.
I thought that I recognized her from something, so I looked up her IMDb. She's in just garbage. Like, garbage movies that, like, oh, you saw those on DVD shelves and liquor stores and on Netflix that you wouldn't watch. She's in, like, shitty movies.
It just wasn't good. Like, it was, like, off. Like, sometimes she was good, and then sometimes she was, like, really bad. Like, over the top.
Having just read the essay about Kirkendall being...
A lesbian?
It seemed to me like they were together before.
His ex-girlfriend?
What's this essay?
In the book, What Would Sipwoods Do? A book that I've recommended at the end of our show as a kid. It's a collection of essays, and one of them is someone claiming that there is a secret, undiscussed relationship between Russell and Kirkendall.
And the episode's called I Love Lucy.
Yeah, but they're coming...
He's kind of blowing my mind right now.
Coming out of Kirkendall's...
The puns never make sense, though.
They always make sense. You have to think about
them. Yeah, they always make sense.
Yes, they do.
Not all the time. They're not like that literal. Like, they don't go that deep.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't go that deep.
Sometimes they don't go that deep. Sometimes they do.
Name another one other than this specific one right now.
Emission accomplished.
Okay, what was that about?
It was about a dude jerking off.
What was the accomplish?
He jerked off.
There was one about putting shit inside of food that I can't remember. It was season one, where Sipwoods put shit in somebody's food.
Yeah.
And the title was...
Shit in food?
Shit in food.
So, it's getting... It's a little bit more credible, isn't it?
And it's also... That does make sense, because it was weird that they both had divorced husbands.
Right.
They both have kids.
Right.
They both have made comments about how men are, like, not defective, but they're shitty.
Yeah.
Kirkendall said her husband was bad in the beginning.
Yeah.
And the way the mother says, oh, she always liked Jill.
Maybe they're together.
Boom.
It's fucking making shit happen over here.
You're welcome.
But I will agree with her acting, especially because she was, like, bitchy. But that might just be good acting as a heroin addict, because she also,
I don't know a lot of heroin addicts, so sorry.
Because when she was sick, she's like, what are you going to do? She's like, I'm going to take you to the hospital, and then I'm going to take you to jail. And then she's like, and she starts crying, and it's like, where the fuck did you think I was going to take you? Are you kidding me? You broke into my house. You endangered my children.
Just because... Never mind.
Just because...
Nobody wants to go to jail.
I understand that.
So when you find out you're going, I mean, it's not... I don't think that that's that far out there that she would lose it.
It just felt a little like she was surprised at the prospect.
Maybe everything...
She hasn't gone to jail yet.
Yeah, so... And then, as you can see, why? Because her fucking mom comes back.
Yeah, her mom.
And doesn't want...
It's her mom.
Doesn't want Kirkendall to press charges.
Because she says, I thought we dropped the charges. And she's like, yeah.
She's what they call a type 1 enabler.
That's what Jeff Von Vonkren would say. JVV?
We're doing things your way and it's not working.
What would JVV do?
Jeff Von Vonkren. No, the thing that was great about that scene, because Mrs. Hastings comes back, and what she does that I found interesting was, it also has the most cheese dick line of the episode, because... She comes in, Jill says, I'll be the one pressing charges. But the way that Mrs. Hastings goes, talks to her, she says, and I understand she's going to go to jail. I thought we dropped those charges. She'd be like, bitch, did you hear the story? She broke into my house. She endangered my kids. Like, guess what? You don't get to decide what happens to her now. I do.
Parents never want to see anything bad happen to their kids.
Dad didn't give a fuck.
Well, I think the dad, you know, I mean, the people have...
She stole his pen.
People have different levels of tolerance. And he had been pushed. To his limit. She wasn't at her
limit. Was at the limit.
Limit! Mrs. Hastings, when she's talking to Jill, she gives suggestions. Why don't we just put her in the hospital? Why don't we do this? Jill then explains to her, unless you actually give her some consequences, nothing's going to happen. That's why she keeps living this way. And then the cheese dick line, like the CSI line, was Mrs. Hastings says, my husband is dying and now you're telling me my daughter may die. Jill says, your daughter needs to learn how to live. And I was like, fucking, okay. Okay, Hallmark Channel. It was pretty cheese dicky.
Not that bad. Could have been worse, you know. But it was all kind of cheese dicky. Like, even Kirkendall kind of, like, softened a little bit. It's like, no, she needs to, like, fail.
Yeah. Yeah, because Kirkendall, I mean, she has the most patience ever that she, like, actually talked to this woman and wasn't like, are you fucking kidding me?
That's because they used the bang, bro.
It's because they used...
From your guys' little,
perspective?
Conspiracy theory.
At the end of the episode, or towards the end of the episode, I forgot to mention it. There's an awkward moment in the bathroom. This is where Fancy has that moment with Sipowitz, where Sipowitz thinks he's only not selling to him. Mm-hmm. Also, Fancy, like, puts down the product line, being like, don't say that. Don't say it helped you with your sickness. It doesn't do that.
Oh, because Metaboy comes back and says that he asks, do you think the vitamins helped?
He thought he had Thai food poisoning.
He's like, do you think the vitamins helped me get better?
And he's like, no, it won't do that. Don't say it would do that just because it's Lillian's. And everyone gets super awkward and then leaves. I just wanted to highlight it because it was a weird scene, at least to me. Especially because Sipowitz then goes, don't move, Metaboy! And then steps over the bench like he couldn't have done that to begin with.
Sometimes Sipowitz is such a bro.
You could have moved. The last scene, though, randomly in the middle of the episode, Russell and Simone talk about how they're engaged, but they can't tell anybody. They make fun of Sipowitz for it, because he has once gotten confident information and then told the entire squad. While they're at the restaurant, Russell makes the joke, he saw the ring. Simone says, do you think he's going to tell the boss? They start talking about their wedding.
Who's that guy?
What guy? Oh, the waiter.
They were just joking around.
No, the guy that comes and buys the bottle of wine.
Joe DeSalvo.
Joe DeSalvo.
Or Joe Salvo. I think it's just Salvo.
He's a friend from the old block.
And he was a famous face.
A wise guy.
He was a famous face, and I couldn't tell why because I didn't recognize him in anything. Apparently he was in Goodfellas, and I didn't
know. He's a wise guy.
He was in Cop Rock, which I hadn't watched. He was also in Rocket Man.
Was he a wise guy?
Not the Elton John Rocket Man. The Harlan Williams Disney Rocket Man. The one where he says, can I call you Bill?
Right.
Was he a wise guy?
That's the only reason I recognize his face. See, isn't it great? You just ignore it.
Or was he an astronaut?
He was an astronaut.
He was an astronaut.
He's the guy that Harlan Williams beats out to get on the rocket. Mm. And gets injured a bunch.
Bummer.
It comes up to Simone flexing his nuts about, like, how much money Simone makes, yeah. How he has a conscience. And it's all really cryptic and weird and asshole-y.
Big swang.
Huh?
Big dick swang.
Yeah, what the kids call big dick swang. Joe goes and sits down, and Simone explains, yeah, that's an old buddy from the neighborhood. He's now a stick-up guy. Because Russell asked if he was a wise guy, and he said, no, he's a stick-up guy. Maybe he's just
paying. He was a what?
He was just asking if... He was maybe just paying tribute to the wise guys.
Wise guy!
But he's actually an independent stick-up guy. And Russell makes kind of a fucked-up statement of, I can't wait to meet all of your reputable friends from the neighborhood. Because this is the second dude that Simone is known to turn out to be an asshole.
We grew up in a bad part of the city, bro.
They keep talking about the wedding, and then Joe sends over wine, and since he doesn't want anything from him, he sends it back and lies about how they're just leaving. And Russell makes the point, if he keeps us from getting married, I'll shoot him. And he says, well, you better get the jump on him, because he will shoot you first. And that's how the episode
ends. That's how it ends.
And it's kind of leading up, like, we're probably going to be talking to Joe more often, because that's what they did with the other guy. They introduced mm-hmm. him, then they had a whole storyline with him. Mm-hmm. Is there anything anybody would like to say before we end the show?
Do you got anything?
Do you have anything?
Don't have anything.
You were looking at your notes. Do we miss anything?
If I would have had something, I would have spoken up.
All right.
This was just an average episode in my mind.
Of NYPD Blue?
Yeah. Ooh.
You didn't really like it.
It was just... I mean, there's nothing great about it. At least I don't think.
Does not get the...
That's why I didn't take very many notes, you know. Usually I can take more than this, but it was like, whatever.
I'm sorry you didn't get one of the earlier ones.
You know, I think the big thing is, you know, it's Kirkendall a homosexual.
Kirkendall's a homosexual. Anything from you, Kyle?
It's pretty socially progressive TV show.
It's very...
Or episode for the time that it was on.
It's a very strange thing how it is and isn't at the same time. Like, there's weird word use.
Yeah, I mean, there's still fucked up shit they said, but it's still, like, an episode that involves two transgendered women.
Where they call them women.
Where they call them women. Most they of the talk time. About having, a pretty progressive surgery. Yeah. And then, you know, and then at the same time, a lot of transgendered women get murdered, so it also brings that to attention.
Yeah, it's an awkward episode on all fronts. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We are on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod.
We have an Instagram?
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Papa Asher, for being here.
Please say something like, oh, thanks.
It doesn't matter. Keep watching NYPD Blue. Have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, especially this episode with its thumps and squeaks and noises. I have learned to never record in that room the same way again. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the show, even if you have tons of negative things to say. I do read them, and I change them the best I can with the money and space that I have. If you want more NYPD Blue information in your life, you can check out a couple different things. You can check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, on Amazon. You can check out What Would Sipowicz Do, a collection of articles written about the show. You could check out Alan Sepinwall's summaries of NYPD Blue online. You could also check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons. If you need to watch NYPD Blue, and who doesn't need to watch NYPD Blue, you can check out Hulu and Amazon streaming services. Every single episode of The Best Show Ever is up there on those services. Thanks again for listening, and have a good one, and keep watching The Best Show Ever, NYPD Blue. Peace.